I wonder which was the most difficult for him. I do find it interesting that at the end of the passage about being rejected in his own hometown, in his own home church, I do find it interesting that Mark says he was amazed at their unbelief. That means he had been expecting a different response. Can I tell you one of the best pieces of advice that I didn't listen to that was given to me when I became a pastor? It was wonderful advice. I didn't listen. To my pain, I didn't listen. I asked one of, to my way of thinking, the best pastors on the face of the earth. I asked him, if you had one piece of advice to give me about being a pastor, what would it be? He said, have no expectations. Need I tell you how many times you've heard me whine and drivel? You know how discouraging it is when you go from being clearful to, you know, people leaving by the droves and all of the stuff that goes along with that, and how, oh, I expected it to go differently. Boy, that was great advice. If I could have just followed it, if I could have just done what God gave me to do without expecting a different response, I wouldn't be ever discouraged, would I? I just find it kind of interesting that Jesus was amazed. It doesn't say he was discouraged. It just said he was amazed at their unbelief, which means he was really expecting a different response. He went to his own home church prepared to work miracles, prepared to give them words of life, and it just bounced off. Let's look why, because I think it can help us. Coming to his hometown, which is Nazareth, by the way, in case you haven't figured that out, he was born in Bethlehem, but that wasn't his hometown. Remember, he had to go to Bethlehem because of that stinking decree by Caesar that everybody had to go to their ancestral home. And so Mary, in her final trimester of pregnancy, this teenage girl had to ride a donkey about 50 miles over rough terrain to go to Bethlehem, and that's where Jesus was born. But then they came back, and he was raised in Nazareth. So coming to his hometown, Nazareth, he began teaching the people in their synagogue, and they were amazed, but not in a good way. And they said, where did this man get this wisdom and these miraculous powers? Now, I would think that would be a normal question. I think that if it had not been for the last statement that Matthew makes here, verse 57, that says they took offense at him, scandalon, strong word. They were angry. They refused to accept the authority of his position. They refused to accept him as being who he was. And why? Because of familiarity. So I think when you take verse 57 into account, the questions take on a different, I mean, you know, you're hearing wisdom from some guy and you're thinking, look, I was his sister's biology lab partner, you know, we ran the track together, you know, and I went to high school with him, you know, who does he think he is, this uppity carpenter? Of course, now, if you went back to your family after you found Jesus, you may have gotten similar responses. I believe this, and I want to talk about this for a minute, but I believe this is why probably, there are exceptions, but why probably you won't be the one that leads your whole family to Jesus. Once in a while that happens. Once in a while there are holdouts where everybody else, you know, surrenders to the Lord because of one person, and one person is a holdout, and sometimes it's years, and God has to send somebody else. But familiarity, you heard the old saying, familiarity breeds contempt. And I think this is a classic example. Here's what I find so comforting about this. Jesus was the perfect example of a Christian in his home. And the Bible says that his brothers and sisters were not believers until after the resurrection. Do you feel like a failure because your last child is not a believer? Do you feel like a failure because your husband or your wife isn't a believer, or your mom or your dad? Do you feel like you're somehow, you're just a failure? If you could just be a better example, they would come to Jesus? Well, you know what? There's no better example than Jesus, and his own family were not believers, all except for Mary and Joseph. There's evidence that Joseph might have even been dead by this time. So Jesus never lost his temper over the Cheerios and flipped a spoonful of Cheerios at his sister who was sticking her tongue out at him and rolling her eyes. You know, he never did those stupid sibling things that we do, and his own brothers and sisters thought he was delusional. It tells us that there was a time where they sought by intervention to have him committed because they thought he was crazy. Of course, all that changed when he rose from the dead. So all you have to do to save your relatives is rise from the dead. There you go. That's easy. No. So these people that he was raised with, who had every opportunity, think of the wealth of blessing they could have had. But then when he came as the Messiah, when he came to do the same things that he'd done in other parts of the country, they just couldn't receive it because of the stinking familiarity thing. Hey, you can't tell me he's not the same guy I went to high school with. Hey, I know his sister. I know his brothers. Who does he think he is? And so he couldn't do the miracles that he wanted to do. I find that such a poignant story. And they took offense at him. Now, sometimes, I'm just going to pass this on just in case you're like I was. Sometimes your brothers and your sisters take offense at you because you're just being obnoxious. Almost every new believer I've ever met is extremely obnoxious the first time they talk to their family. And we wonder why they get uptight, because we tell them, you're going to hell, and you need to get your act together like I did. Oh, well, of course. Well, here, let me bow down at your feet. No, that ain't going to happen. I love your story about when you gave your life to Jesus and your sister says, oh no, not you too. Of course, here she is. Now she's walking with Jesus too. But it could be that some of the response that people have is just because we're being obnoxious. And family, they know you. You're not going to pull the wool over their eyes and say, oh, I'm holy now. You're going to go, yeah, right. Yeah, clean up your room. But here, once again, folks, if you've done the best that you could and they're still not believers, take comfort in the fact that Jesus did it perfectly. And the people he hung out with, most of them did not believe in him until later. I can't tell you how comforting that is to me. And of course, the amazing thing is when you get farther down the road, you realize that the example and the prayer that you've set, sometimes it looks like nothing is happening, and then God brings somebody else into their life, and this person says the same things that you said, and you finally just shut your mouth and said, it's not working. God brings somebody else, and they fall on their knees and give their life to Jesus, and you go, what's up with that? I did my best. Yeah, but you're related. Doesn't mean God's helpless. Be an example anyway. It's what we were praying for Fred when he went down this weekend. Because, you know, it's being around your family sometimes is really hard. Because they know how to push your buttons. Just be Jesus to them. You may get the same kind of mixed reviews that he did, but that doesn't mean the story's over. God may send somebody else. So I find that tremendously encouraging. You might want to write next to verse 58, he could not do many miracles. Matthew just says he did not, but the reason that he did not is that he couldn't, and the reason that he couldn't is because nobody came to him like they did every place else. Unbelief. I remember Pastor Chuck wrote a little booklet. I had it for years, and then I gave it to somebody, and now they don't print it. But he wrote a booklet called Unbelief, the Thief. Because of how many ways we are ripped off simply because we just, because of unbelief. Psalm 78, write it down. Look it up. Examine your own hearts. It says that Israel suffered because of their hard hearts. They limited the Holy One. You know what that means? That means God wanted to do stuff he wasn't allowed to do because they didn't trust him. Isn't that sobering? It wasn't that he didn't have the ability. It wasn't that he didn't want to. He did have the ability and he did want to. He couldn't because of their refusal. That's what the word unbelief means, apisteo. It means to not lean on, to not trust in, to not rely on God. And because of that, they limited what he wanted to do. Let's not be that way. Let's learn. Here's another thing I just want to pass on to you. It's something that challenges me. It's challenged me every time I read this. Don't allow familiarity with people to rob you of something that God might want to do for you through them. I come expecting for God to use me. I ask him to, not because I think I'm anything. I'm the first one to say, I don't get it. I don't know why you made me a pastor, why you put me here. I don't understand it. I'll do my best to rely on you and be faithful. But I come expecting that God is going to use me because I ask him to, and he wants to. But I also come expecting for God to use you to speak to me. And to use you to speak to others. So be open to that. Yeah, I know this person. Well, you know what? They thought they knew Jesus. But they didn't know him as well as they thought they did they? Or they wouldn't have asked these questions. Oh, we know his sisters. But see, those weren't his real sisters. Those were half-sisters. Oh, we know his dad. Been to his carpenter shop a whole bunch of times. But see, that wasn't his real father. So maybe they weren't knowing him. They were leaving the God factor out of it. So be open that God could speak to you, minister to you what he wants to do through other people that you might be very familiar with. It's happened to me so many times. It's happened with you, Jonathan. Times when I talked to you on the phone and you said just the perfect thing that I needed to hear from the Lord, and I was so grateful for that. It's happened with Julia. It's happened with Dave, and happens with Mike all the time. And all of you. So be open to that. Don't limit the Holy One. He's got a lot of stuff he wants to do. So, just to give you the background of the story, if you're not familiar with it, Herod that's mentioned here. When we've been studying the book of Acts, we've looked at a guy named Herod, but it's not this Herod. And when we read the story of Jesus' birth, we saw the name Herod, but that wasn't this Herod either. There were a lot of Herods. They were all bad. That was a bad dude family. and a bad dudette family. The women were bad, the men were bad, and they were in power, which I find to be really interesting. And God still got his work done. But Herod, the tetrarch, remember, his father was the one that had all the babies under 2 years old put to death. When the wise men came and said, hey, we hear that there's going to be a king born in Israel, and he was so paranoid. Different guy. This guy had John the Baptist put to death, and we see the story mentioned in these first 12 verses. But he's feeling guilty when he hears about the miracles that are happening, and he's thinking, oh man, John the Baptist has risen from the dead. Isn't it amazing when people try to rationalize things that they know are wrong, that the minute they're confronted with something that touches that guilt, they immediately jump to the worst possible conclusion. I think this is one of the most pitiful stories, and like I said earlier, for the longest time this bothered me. I'll just be frank with you. For the longest time, the story of John the Baptist did not make me feel safe. Because I thought if a stupid politician, because he's too drunk at a dinner party to stand for his principles, has one of the greatest servants of God that's ever lived, if he hasn't put to death, then how in the world am I ever going to be safe? That comes from a misunderstanding of what my life is all about. I don't know how long my life is going to be, and neither do you. Can I just offer you something? I did make a very bold statement that there's no such thing as a premature death for a servant of God. Premature meaning before God's time for them. Premature not meaning before our time. I have lots of friends that died way before the time that I thought they should have. I remember my friend John Corson when his 16-year-old daughter died in a car accident from the same injury that his wife had died from in another car accident 8 years earlier. And he was walking along the beach there in Oregon and saying, why, Lord, why? Never was there ever a dad that loved his daughter more than John that I've known. And he said, while he was standing there saying, why, he said, God spoke to his heart and said, why not? Oh, but she had such a life ahead of her. And the Lord said, no, she didn't. This was her life. You thought she did. You hoped she did. Aren't you glad that you raised her properly and taught her to know Jesus because she only had a 16-year life? Wouldn't we all do that if we knew the people we loved only had 16 years? But we don't think that way, do we? John had a very short ministry. He spent 30 years of his life preparing in an extraordinary way for a ministry that only lasted a couple of years, not even three. But that was his appointed life. I'll just tell you this. This is the way I look at it. If God's finished with me, why stick around? I don't want to be here 1 minute longer than what God has me here. And it's not because I hate my life. I just know what waits for me ahead. We talked about this when we saw Gwen a couple of days ago. And so once in a while, the crushing reality of that hits you. But I would say that when you're young, you pretty much feel immortal. And then the older you get, the more you start seeing reality. A So this doesn't bother me in the same way that it used to. It doesn't even bother me that Herod did such a stupid thing. It doesn't bother me in the same way that it... Because lots of people did stupid things. And we've been studying the book of Acts, and we saw Stephen in the beginning, so to speak, of his career, put to death. But the way that he died led to the salvation of Saul of Tarsus, which led to the entire civilized world hearing about Jesus. And then other apostles lived to be 100 years old. That was the length of their life. Are you tracking with me? That's why we sang the song, when it's all been said and done, there's just one thing that matters, that I live my life for you. Of course, that's the truth. Supposedly, we believe that because we're Christians. It takes the sting out of death. I love Andrew Peterson's lyric. He says, Jesus, you beat death at death's own game. Isn't that a great lyric? Doesn't have the same sting it used to. Jesus grieved at the loss of John the Baptist, but it's a different kind of grief than if we have no hope. This isn't just trying to look at the bright side. It's the reality of the world that we believe exists because we are Christians, that my life belongs to God. It's as long as he says it is. It's interesting that it's an already written story. He isn't making it up as he goes along. He knows how long it's going to be. I just don't know how long it's going to be. Can I tell you this from personal experience? That's the reason I'm still here. It's the reason I didn't run away and go back to where I wanted to live when everything crashed. Because I don't know how long my life's going to be. I didn't want to finish my life thinking about myself. If God gave me something to do, I wanted to do it. Who knows? Maybe it would be the last thing that I do for him. I want to live my life that way every day. So I look at John the Baptist. Things did not work out for him the way that he thought. There's indication he was a little bit disillusioned in prison when he heard what Jesus was not doing. And Jesus had to send word to comfort him. But he finished well, didn't he? Told the truth. You think if you tell the truth, everyone's going to like you? Well, you would be the first one. You think if we tell the truth in these days that we're never going to be imprisoned or fined or put to death? I don't know. I don't have that guarantee that I can see. So what matters? Well, now it just depends on what you're living your life for. If you're living your life for his approval, I want to look Jesus in the eyes, and when he says, what did you do with your life? I want to say, I did what you told me. What matters more than that? Tell me. The expectations of your mom or your dad or your kids? Or all your high school friends that made something of themselves? What matters?